I'm not under the influence of alcohol. A lot of pain meds, but not alcohol.
But if the rest of us want, we can find some alcohol from upstairs, and Kevin can be the little same.
I will pass for now. I know, I'm a wuss.
We still have some of that purple stuff, too.
Purple drink?
Yeah, it's really good.
What, the one that looks like nail polish?
Yeah.
Welcome to Preferred Enemies, the Undergopher Network Warhammer 40K podcast. I'm your host, Rob.
Kevin.
Dennis.
And Richard.
And this is episode 107, and as we are still between 40K Codex releases, we are not going to be doing a Codex review. Instead, we're going to get back to some of the other topics we like to talk about, and this one is going to be kind of an ancillary slash appendix to our Know Your Slot series, because instead of talking slots, we're going to be talking detachments and formations and mega formations and Voltron formations and just talking about where that is going with the game and how it's changing building your army and where we think it's going for the game. So that's where what we're going to be talking about eventually. But first, we're going to talk news. And we do have a few things to talk about, despite the fact that there's been a lack of releases from GW Prime, but that doesn't mean that Forge World hasn't been busy. And the first thing you'll notice if you go to Forge World's site is that Forge World has a new site design. And if that site design looks familiar, it's because they are now pretty much using the same platform as GW Prime, which comes with all the things that it's I think a cleaner site. It's a more modern site. It's also weird to search, just like the GW Prime site is. And there are still some bugs with that. One we found searching for the
Avatar.
The Eldar Avatar is that in the current codex, the Eldar Avatar is a Lord of War, but if you search under Eldar Lords of War, you will not find him. You will only find him in the HQ section. So there are obviously still some inconsistencies. I think somebody else mentioned, like, there are characters that if you search under it's a Red Scorpion character, but he doesn't show up under Red Scorpions, but if you search under, like, independent, it's just things like that. They're
right,
and that stuff that'll just shake out over time. Any new, you know, as someone who has done site deploys before, any large site deploy rarely goes completely 100% right.
Yeah.
So, but the site seems perfectly functional. One thing I thought was interesting, but still kind of made me sad, was the site will ask you when you first get there, what nation are you from, but it does not change its prices into values appropriate. So, I mean, I'm guessing that GW Prime site does not do on the fly. You know, they have their prices preset when they go to print, like for White Dwarf. So they know how much their kits are going to cost, regardless of a currency valuation.
Yeah.
But Forge World does not. And so everything is still in British pounds. So that I was kind of disappointed because that's one thing that always frustrates me being a Yank on this side of the pond is that the prices are not in money that I am as familiar with where I can look at it and immediately know how much it's going to cost me. But I know enough about the conversion rate that I can figure it out.
Well, it's only 22. That's a fantastic. Oh, wait. No, it's like 44.
Yeah. Shit. No, it's not that. It's like, it's like 30 it's like, something. Right. It's because it's what? It's $1.6 to the pound. So,
but yeah, it's one of those where you look at it and go, oh, wait, that's way cheaper. And then, yeah, no, wait, no, it's not.
No, yeah.
No, it's not.
And then, Forge World has also been releasing some new stuff. They, announced the, Commander Eidolon for you, Emperor's Children 30K players and he looks pretty sweet. Most of the big characters do. Dennis brings it up. It is I was close. $1.57 as of recording time. $1.57 to the pound as opposed to 1.6. Yeah, Eidolon looks pretty slick. And then the ones that I think are of more interest if you're not playing 30K, even though they are technically 30K models, is the new Tech Marines they released in Mark III and Mark IV armor.
Yeah, those look pretty slick.
Yeah. And if anybody in 40K time is going to have pristine suits of Mark III and Mark IV is going to be Tech Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I even think the Mark IV one looks a lot like the Tech Marine like one of the Tech Marine kits you can buy right now.
Yeah, it does. It looks very similar.
Yeah. And I actually kind of like the slightly thinner, not quite as chunky servo arm that's on the servo harness there.
Yeah, no, I think that does look really nice. I like the helmet on the Mark IV as well.
Yeah, really cool. The Mark III is just a guy in a bear head. It doesn't look like there's a helmet option with it. At least they don't show it in any of the sample pictures. But yeah, I think I like the Mark IV just a bit better. But they're both perfectly good. And if you're running either you're running any army that wants to use Tech Marines and you don't want to use just the fine cast one they have right now, these look really nice. If you're doing an Iron Hands army, these would just be great for doing like even commanders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This one looks really good for Marine players of, you know, whatever era you're playing in. I think it's a good choice.
One thing I do like about the new Forge World site for the new stuff, not for everything, but the new ones, they have the 360 spin views.
Ah, yes.
Which is true. Really nice.
Okay, yeah, that is a feature they did not have before, and it is kind of nice to have that. You know, being older Marks of Armor, a little bit of conversion would even make that into a pretty nice-looking Warp Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that kit has a lot of potential right there. That's pretty much it. Well, and then I know there have been some more pictures. I think it's just different versions of the same pictures we've seen before on the big Tau kit, which has not been officially announced yet. But that is a sweet-looking suit, and I know it's going to be ridiculously expensive, and I'm probably going to have to try to order one.
Right. I hope it's not too expensive.
I'm sure it will be. But, I mean, it looks to be small Titan-sized, or at least large knight-sized. Like,
right.
What I think somebody mentioned, like Cerastus knight-sized.
Tall, but way bulkier.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, guns on top of guns on top of guns. I love that the arms are basically three ion accelerators strapped together.
Yeah, each.
Yeah.
And it'll probably fire at every single target on the board in turn one.
Oh, yeah, because it's most likely a gargantuan creature, which makes me happy because a Tau with stomps and feel no pain and effectively immune to poison and instant death and all that makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Doesn't make Dennis very happy.
And not really when I can think that it has so many guns, it doesn't matter how many units I put on the table or models, it'll probably kill them all on the top of one.
It's probably going to cost 2 to 3 times as much as your gargantuan creatures, though.
It probably won't kill all of them and just most of them.
I mean, I've had my stuff alpha striked by like a lot less than that. So.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Yeah, that thing is going to be a one man alpha strike though. It has it really does have all the guns.
Oh, yeah.
It is ridiculous. So, but it's ridiculous in a wonderful good way. So, other than that, again, not much in the way of releases. Although there were a couple of interesting digital releases that we saw. First was the trailer for Free Blade.
Yeah, which it looks kind of slick.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Infinity Blade, the mobile game where you're doing sword fighting on your tablet or phone, kind of doing like swipes, but then it's also going to have like tap to shoot on it. So a combination of those two, you know, mechanics should be fun. And they show you fighting, look like Chaos and Orcs mostly.
Yeah.
Although I'm still kind of weird on the fighting a Helldrake in close combat. Not sure how that works, but
it's because the Helldrake flew down close by.
Yeah.
And see, it's okay because it gives you that awesome, you know, scene of it cutting a Helldrake in half.
That is true.
It's in hover mode.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Yeah. It's in hover mode. He charges it and.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. And then the other thing we saw is we had talked, not the last episode, but 2 episodes ago when we were all together. Was the trailer for Inquisitor Martyr, which was basically a picture of a guy's face.
Yep.
I mean, that was the trailer. Well, at Gamescom, they actually had pre-alpha gameplay footage. We watched about 10 minutes of that, and it looks interesting. It is a Diablo, I would say Diablo-esque, if not like just straight up Diablo clone, but it is a Diablo clone, but the settings all looked appropriately huge and cavernous as the inside of Imperial spaceships should be. And it looked like they're going to have 3 different classes, which we are guessing are the 3 different kinds of Inquisitors, you know, Xenos, Malleus, and Hereticus.
Yeah, that sounds like appropriate.
Yeah.
And because the one in the pre-alpha build was the Malleus from appearances.
Yeah, because he was in big armor and walking around mostly, you know, half melee and half like plasma gun, it seemed like.
Yeah. like I think he started off with just like a a bolter or a bolt pistol, and then like picked up that plasma gun. After like the first little encounter, and started using that. But then there was a lot of good power sword action there too.
Yeah, and it looked like there was interesting because they had him fighting a blight ogryn and some other things, and he was definitely, you know, he was going through a Nurgle infested area, and everything looked appropriately overgrown and gross, and it looks interesting. And if this is the pre-alpha version, then I imagine the actual final version should look and play pretty slick.
Yeah,
so I'm
awesome.
I'm looking forward to trying that one out. And then obviously Eternal Crusade is still in eternal development, but Richard, you said you got an email from them.
I did get one of the updates that said that they were actually getting pretty close to actually opening the early access to the Founders.
Okay.
So it should be happening sometime this fall.
Close to eventually having something finally happen?
Yes.
Okay.
And as we all know from watching Steam over the last year or so, early access has never gone bad in the history of gaming.
It's a fantastic idea, and it always works out wonderfully for everyone involved.
No, wait. Swap that.
Or the opposite. Or the opposite of that. Yeah.
It works sometimes.
It does. Yeah. To be fair, and yeah, we're kind of taking the piss out of them, but to be fair, as far as Eternal Crusade, they have been very transparent with how the game is coming along. Mm-hmm. They've done a lot of Twitch video, like Twitch replays and live streaming to show people this is the state of the game at any given point and where they're going with it. So I don't want to necessarily say, obviously it'll go 100% right. But at this point, I'm willing to give them more the benefit of the doubt that they're ready for. Mm-hmm. They are ready to open this up to the people who have invested in it already, and that way they can start really seeing how it performs under a real load with real players. So
no, and I get that that's part of this environment we're in now with Kickstarter and crowdfunded games, where early access and some of that stuff to shake out that stuff is a key part of it. It does get really frustrating though when you see a bunch of these projects that, and I don't even know what their original dev time was for Eternal Crusade. But you see these Kickstarter games, or whatever, that like, okay, we're going to Kickstart it and fund it, and it'll be done in a year, and then 2 years go by.
Actually, I think with them, they were originally saying like spring or summer 2015, because I remember when they first announced it a couple of years ago, it seemed like this was a really, really early announcement of something. But if they're opening up Founders Access sometime in the fall, they're not that far off.
No, they're really not.
For a project of this scope with what they're trying to do, that's actually not bad.
Yeah.
That's not that bad. But not that we can talk about doing early announcements of things coming down the pipe, because we do have a bit of an announcement, just a little thing, something we kind of are throwing together in about 9 months. And that is, we are going to officially announce today that in Memorial Day weekend 2016 at Conquest 47, we will be holding the Midwest Conquest GT.
Woo!
It's obviously not the first GT event in the area. That honor goes to the Midwest Massacre in years past. But this would be the first one held at Conquest, as far as I'm aware, in its 47-year history. Yeah, that's right. This is Conquest 47. This is a con that is well established in the Kansas City area. So, they are partnering with us to make this possible. We're going to be located at the Sheraton Crown Center in downtown Kansas City. It's a fantastic hotel. There is a con rate for rooms, and there's more information about that on the Conquest website, and we link to that on the Midwest Conquest GT website. We have seen the room where we are going to be doing our gaming. And it is of a very nice, large size. We should have no problem fitting in 32 tables, because our goal this year for our event is 64 players. I think that's where the Renegade Open hit.
It's where most GTs set at.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely doable.
Yeah. Now, we can't announce prizes or anything like that. We are working out the details of that with Conquest. And the reason I say we're working that out with them is because other than your badge to get into Conquest, there is no additional charge for this tournament, which is what we did last year. Just last year, we only had like a month and online registration had already ended. But you can register right now. It's $40 right now, and then at the first of the year, it goes to $50.
Yep. So you've got through the end of 2015 to get the $40 rate for the entire con, which includes – it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes.
Warhammer tournament would be Saturday and Sunday, so you get extra day at the con to be able to do other things. $40 till the end of the year, and then it goes to $50, and then we're going to end registration for the tournament when 64 slots spill up.
Or
when at the end of April, when online registration is finished.
Right, and that will give us 1 month to kind of finalize things and get things, you know, we'll have our final list of attendees and we'll be able to go. But yeah, we don't think we should have any problem with any luck. We'll be obviously reaching out to all the people out in, you know, 40K podcasting and blogging and such to try to get the word out. But if you are anywhere near the Midwest, we invite you and welcome you to come to Kansas City at this event. The hotel is fantastic. The convention has the entire hotel for the weekend. I mean, it's theirs. And honestly, besides the, you know, you'll obviously have Friday for your con, you know, for doing con activities. Mm-hmm. There are parties Saturday and, you know, Saturday night. So, you know, we're going to basically do three rounds a day. So by 7 o'clock at night, we should be, you know, 6 to 7 o'clock, yep. We should be wrapped up. So you've got your evening to do other, you know, if there are other events.
There's seminars and stuff going on all throughout the evening. Under Discussion will be there doing RPGs and board games well into the evening, all three nights. So there's a lot of other stuff going on with the con, and it's a really great experience.
Yeah. We are planning on running this under ITC rules, and obviously the ITC rules will shift a little bit every year. So these would be falling under the 2016 ITC rules, which obviously don't exist yet because it's not 2016. But we are planning on being an ITC event, so anything you do here will contribute to your overall ITC score and ranking. At least that is our hope. And we're in the very early stages of getting this set up, but we do have a website. It's MidwestConquest.com. You can also follow the event on Twitter at MWConquestGT. And there's also going to be Facebook pages for the event itself, and also I think we'll kind of do the – I don't know if we're going to do the Iron Halo thing where they have one for the event and one for just kind of a community to talk about it.
Yeah.
But we will have – events set up, you know, we'll have Facebook interaction set up for that when you hear this. So there will be multiple ways to get information about what's going on at the tournament. And like I said, this is going to be Memorial Day weekend, the 28th and 29th, I believe.
Yes, the 28th and 29th.
Yeah, May 28th, 29th, 2016, right here in the heart of the Midwest of Kansas City, Missouri. So all the people that we met at the Iron Halo, all the people that we've met at the Renegade Open who are willing to travel a few hours and want to throw down with us. Now, granted, we won't be playing because imagine the four of us will be judging.
Right.
Yeah.
But we think there's enough other players in the, you know, in the Midwest that are willing to come out here that I'm sure you'll find a nice variety of opponents and some good gaming to, you know, some good games to get. So, So MidwestConquest.com. Let's put it on your calendars now. We are going to be running in a GT in 2016 Memorial Day weekend. And with that little announcement out of the way, let's go ahead and move on to our main topic of detachments and formations. We've got a stack. We've got numerous stacks of books here because we wanted to basically spell out the entire history and chronology of detachments and formations. Because let's face it, for the longest time, detachment meant, oh, you have a force org chart. You have one force org chart. It's the same force org chart as everyone else. and that's it. And that is an artifact from third edition, because before that, it was all fantasy style percentages.
Right.
Of like characters core, like core and special. And so third edition brought us the force org chart that we now know today as the combined arms detachment. We know it. We love it. Every army has access to it. And other than some alternate versions of that for different play modes that they had in like third and fourth edition and fifth edition too, that was it. That was the entirety of army building. You built to that. And And everyone was, well, I don't know, I can't say if everyone was happy, but that's kind of what it was for the longest time.
Yeah, it lasted a long time. Yeah. It worked pretty well for as a structure for...
What, 20 all, years?
Yeah, for all the armies.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very good structure. It is nice to have an even playing field, but there are always armies that it didn't feel right for, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I've talked about it here before. I would have loved to have seen Tyranids go back to, like, that fantasy-style point system where it's like you do percentages and you could take a lot more stuff and not be limited on slots, because Tyranids should be, like, a swarm of monsters, you know? So being able to limit, like, oh, you can only take 6 units always seemed a little weird. Chaos stuff. That was one that never... The Chaos Marine book always never really worked, because it was like, well, these are elites, and then they become troops, and then these become HQs, or these could be troops. And it was always just a little wonky, because you could have units that were the same unit that occupied different battlefield roles, and it just... It made it very weird. While it was a good structure, it was clunky in places, and I'm glad that they've kind of decided to open it up and do...
Yeah, the newer style attachments. It had to do a lot of work to be able to fit in, like, kind of those thematic sort of armies.
But for, for Imperial armies, worked like gangbusters.
Yeah.
Well, I mean.
Also, though, for a new player, it was a lot easier to have them come in and say, oh, I just need an HQ and 2 troops, rather than I need to figure out how many points this is, and my HQ is only like 25%.
No, I agree with that.
I mean, they took math out. And sometimes that's a good thing.
Right. But and on the flip side of it, though, the balancing factor between 40K and fantasy always had been when fantasy was still using percentages, because they don't anymore. They don't even use points. But
What is points?
The balancing factor with that always used to be that people would complain about 40K and be like, well, when you're playing fantasy, yes, there's more math involved, but I'm not going to just load up and take a bunch of monsters or a bunch of heroes and just stomp your army that's nothing but troops. Whereas in 40K, because you're doing the slots, there were certain armies that could take monsters in slots. So you had certain armies that could take 6 monsters. Other armies that could only maybe take 1. And that would be kind of an inherent mismatch. You know, because not every unit of troops equaled another unit of troops. Like, if you took 6 units of Gretchen... and I took 6 units of Space Marines.
Yeah.
I'm going to fuck your face in, you know? So,
and that's why points are important.
Right. Yeah. But there's, you know, but it helped balance it out a little bit, but just the slots by themselves didn't necessarily balance it out.
Right.
Right.
And then in 2007, we saw what I think is the first major new possibility. And that was the formations that were introduced in Apocalypse. Now, these didn't really impact the core game that most people were playing, because they were Apocalypse only, but it was the concept of you take this combination of units together, and then in this book it was also and pay a small, you know, a small to moderate points value for the privilege of taking them together and getting these rules. And you would get a collection of special rules that worked with those, you know, applied to just those units, and usually it involved some form of synergy of, like, this is the command model or command unit, and then these other units all kind of key off of it, and added things that in some cases were very specific to Apocalypse, but sometimes it was just rules that made particular units function better by virtue of you taking them in a combination. But again, most of these were geared towards very high point value games. They were large units or many units or several units of very expensive things all working together. So it wasn't anything that was necessarily intended for the core game, but it was the first time we had seen something like this.
Right.
And then fast forward again to 6th edition, and their version of Apocalypse had the same concept, but got rid of the whole idea of, well, paying extra for the privilege of taking those units together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it also introduced the concept of kind of typing the formations.
Yeah.
So that you had your, where you'd have, you know, your battle formations, or you'd have high command, or you'd have psychic choirs.
I do like the way that 6th edition did it, rather than the original version of Apocalypse, though, because the point tax was always a little weird, you know, to pay for the units and then to pay extra for it to get the formation. I like the fact that in 6th edition, they kind of balanced it where you get less bonuses, but you're not actually paying anything extra. So it just made it a little bit cleaner. Like, okay, I'm going to take this, this, and this, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that just makes it – I think that made the system a little bit cleaner. I think they could probably have done a better job balancing some of it, what you get for free.
But, right. But again, this – but we're also talking Apocalypse. Right. And balance so in Apocalypse not really – I really don't think it's a thing because Apocalypse is meant for narrative battles.
Welcome to Apocalypse, where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Exactly.
Right. But yeah, and this also kind of gave us a, like a sneak peek at like the way they were moving towards on the data sheets.
That's true.
Because this is one of the first times that we really saw that the one-sheeter sort of thing.
Which to us nowadays is we're still used to seeing that. That's the layout of pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, this did not really impact the core game. The only way it impacted the core game was people would buy these bundles because it was easy. Mm-hmm. You know, when they sold them as kits, you would get more models at a discount usually because I know that's how I loaded up on my Tau Army back in the day.
That's how you got me into the game.
Yep. So, but this did not impact again, core 40K because it was Apocalypse only. Mm-hmm. And that is actually an issue that is still a bit of a frustration to me today is that there are a number of formations in in Apocalypse or in some of the Apocalypse War Zones that have been released that really don't have anything to them that are Apocalypse specific, but you can't use them because they are Apocalypse formations. And then I think was it later that year? Because Apocalypse 6th Edition was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was right before the Advent calendar. So it was right before they started releasing the data sheets. But actually, if you take a step back, when they did 6th Edition, they really released your first true alternate Force Org when you got your Allied Detachment Force Org.
Yes, that, very important to mention that. So that technically the Allied Detachment had happened before Apocalypse.
Yeah.
But that and the Allies Matrix itself really changed. I mean, that was a major upset.
But that was the first time that you could take a small force and pair it with something else, that you didn't have to have HQ and two troops before you could get other things. So all of a sudden, now you could take an HQ and a cheap-as-chips unit of troops and get something badass, and that changed the dynamic of everything.
Yeah, and it still does. I mean, how often do we still see the Helldrake dropped in as part of an Allied detachment by taking like a sorcerer and a unit of cultists, because that's the cheapest way, and the sorcerer gives you something special, and a unit of cultists is a cheap troop to sit on an objective. So, but yeah, the Allied detachment really changed things up, and you're right, that was our first detachment that was an alternate to the standard Force Org, but it wasn't from a different game mode, and it wasn't something that was tied to a particular army either. But then the Advent calendar hit near, I would say middle to end of 6th edition. Surprisingly, we didn't realize at the time. But with the Advent calendar formations, which was like the Adeptus Astartes Stormwing, I think the Reclusium Command Squad was part of that, the Tau Firebase Support Cadre, which is probably still the most used of all of those, and then the Eldar had the Ghost Army.
Which I was highly disappointed by.
Well, but also there were other little data sheets in there too, because that was the first time that they released Bellicor and
Cypher. Yeah.
And, they released little one sheets for them, and that was really the first time ever, wasn't it, that we had seen like a one sheet?
Well, outside of like White Dwarf.
Yeah.
And old White Dwarf before it had become basically a catalog.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was the first time that they'd added like single units back in the game. Here's a one sheet with the rules for this particular thing.
Right. But the big thing out of there, and the one that's relevant to our discussion here, is those formations. And that was something, especially with the way the Allies Matrix was at the time, where I think there were, it was more broken out, but it seemed like some of the connections were a little bit wonky, like Tau being battle brothers with Marines. So suddenly you saw a lot of Marine players buying Tau, Riptides and Broadsides, because suddenly... And I think Eldar also had them as battle brothers, I remember. Yeah. So, yeah. You saw a lot of Tau Firebase support cadres popping up. Mm-hmm. And that was something that completely changed it. And it was the whole concept of you take your Apocalypse formation, you strip the Apocalypse part of it, there's no extra point cost, and just for taking these units with these restrictions, you get some special rules, and some of them were better than others. And the Firebase support cadre is, what, tank hunters and preferred enemy half the armies in the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so nothing bad there. And from there, we started... Then after that, we started seeing the Inquisition Codex, actually, I think the Inquisition Codex was one, or no, Richard has other.
The Tyranid Vanguard, Leviathan data sheets.
Ah, yes. Yeah. I always forget those.
Those popped up, which were great little add-ons for the Tyranid Codex, which came out in sixth edition and to
a resounding thud.
To a resounding meh. There was some neat add-on things for those. Some of them still kind of came away with a resounding meh.
Yeah,
then some of them were actually really cool because it was our first glimpse at the objective secured rule.
Yep.
And which was just a sign of things to come when 7th edition came out.
Right.
I know we talked about that a lot when it first hit because we're like... What's this? Doesn't everybody already have it? Troops weird. Are the only thing.
Right. So,
but that was the big thing, is that gargoyles weren't troops, and suddenly they were as good as troops.
Right.
And this was
prior. In fact, actually, they were almost, like, better than troops.
Right.
Because they had a thing that let them score, even if, unless
other things that had that were around, yeah.
Right. So and nothing else had that.
Unless
at the
it was
time.
Another unit of gargoyles, yeah.
Right. And then it also, in the last one, gave us our kind of first glimpse of a formation made of other formations.
Yep.
Which is a kind of interesting sort of format for building a whole army, and which kind of leads into that whole concept of the Decurion style of detachment, which we'll get to later.
Yeah. Now, when we first looked at this, and you can go back and listen to our reviews of the Rising Leviathan stuff, is that formation of formations was not anything that was remotely feasible for a standard-sized game. It was effectively an apocalypse formation without officially being an apocalypse formation.
Because of how many points...
It was like 3,000 to 4,000, wasn't it? It was ridiculous.
Minimum.
Yeah, it was almost 4,000 points, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So, but again, it was the concept. It was the fact that we were seeing this, and it was a thing that was suddenly available to core. You're going to keep you hearing that phrase at least during this chronology. Core 40K did not have that option at all, and so now here was an army that had it. And then we saw the Inquisition Codex, and that was the first one, I think, that gave us a codex-specific detachment because of how the army was built, that it could not fit inside a normal force. At the time, it was still the primary detachment.
Yeah. Right.
And so you had an army that was basically, the HQ was the only thing that was required, and then you had up to 3 elites for your henchmen. And that was something we hadn't seen before either, but it was like, well, instead of making henchmen troops the way they did in the old Grey Knight.
Right.
The old Grey Knight Codex was taking certain Inquisitors and shifting things around. It was like, nope, these are all just elites. You don't get troops. Then that's fine. You know, here you go. Your organization is one HQ and units of elites. And that worked for them. And that was actually like the first time I looked at it and go, okay, that makes sense. You don't need to have troops for, to make that. And that opens up a lot of possibilities.
And we've seen that pattern carry on with things like Legion of the Damned, which is an all elite army, or Harlequins, which has no HQs. Same with Skitarii, which, suddenly it was getting outside of data slates and getting into mainline print codexes where you're seeing armies that don't fit the normal layout of an army. And so the combined arms detachment, Officio Assassinorum is another one where it has a detachment that is one assassin.
Yeah.
Yep. But then there's also the formation of 4 assassins.
Yep.
And then that concept went further when we hit 7th edition. And our first 7th edition codex was orcs. And that is where we saw a couple of concepts, although one of them is still just a formation, but it was the idea of the formation that is basically everything in the army.
Right.
Right.
But, like, for example, we had the Orc Warband, which was a war boss, a mech, a unit of knobs or mega knobs, six units of boys, and a unit of Gretchen. And, you know, you could build an army out of that, and that could be your main force. And it had a number of rules that, you know, were that you got as being part of that. But then if you didn't want to go all the way with that particular formation, they introduced with the 7th edition codexes the idea of the unique detachment for that faction. Mm-hmm. In this case, the Orc Horde detachment, which was basically Orc Warband Light with more flexibility. But you gave, like in this one, you gave up the rule where you could use the Waw each and every turn.
Yeah.
But you still got like Hammer of Wrath if you charged 10 inches or more. And you still got the ability to reroll your, you know, your Warlord trait if it was from this codex. And the big thing on this one was it was very similar to your standard Force Org, but it had one extra HQ, three extra troops, and then everything else that you could normally have in an HQ. So basically it gave orcs more to play with.
Right, right. And then the Ghazghal supplement had one that was even slightly different.
Yeah, the Great Waw detachment, where your compulsory was one HQ, two troops, one elite, and then you had the ability to take six additional troops, three additional elites, three fast attacks, three heavy supports, one additional HQ. So basically you got extra troops and an extra elite slot.
Yeah.
So
more focused on knobs and knobs and boys.
Right. Which, you know, makes sense thematically for that.
Or the Green Tide that they also had, which was an Apocalypse formation, and they just rebranded it and put it into the core game.
You know, and so all of a sudden now with that one codex, you have your standard Force Org, and then, you know, your Orc Horde detachment, which is extra troops, and then this one, which is extra elites. That's really cool. That gives you a lot of flexibility just within the detachments without even going into the formations on how to build that army.
And then with the way 7th edition had changed, it kind of spelled out army construction rules saying you can have one or more detachments in your army. There's nothing stopping you from having a Great Horde or the Orc Horde or a Great Waw and a Combined Arms or an allied detachment or throw in another formation. And Waw Ghazghal was one of the first books to add a bunch of formations. You know, one of the first print books, because obviously we'd seen it in Rising Leviathan.
Yeah.
But this is one of the first books in print, because even before that, the supplemental codexes didn't have formations. It was just like, here's an alternate Warlord traits, here's some alternate relics, and here's like one or two rules for your army that change like what counts as troops. But that was the first one that really gave us a whole bunch of new formations and said, go play with this. You can build your army with these.
Yeah. And just the concept that 7th edition brings that formations themselves are detachments.
Right.
And that whole dynamic of changing everything to scoring, and then in the combined arms detachment, your advantage for taking the combined arms detachment being objective secured.
Right.
And the allied detachment as well.
Right. So if you went more general, you were better at scoring, but if you went with your faction's detachment, you might get something that fits your faction a little bit better. Now, that's up to debate. Some are better at this than others. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think of some of the others, like I know Real Space Raiders for Dark Eldar were somewhat popular because of all the fast attack slots, but the bonus you got was stealth.
Right.
And better stealth for your troops and not as good for everybody else.
I mean, you didn't take it for the bonuses. You took it so you could have a bunch of transports for your fast attack slots. So
exactly.
You could put any Battle Brothers in it, or just have a lot
Venom
of Venoms
spam, yeah.
Because Venoms are still good.
Mm-hmm. Right. The Blood Angel one gave you Furious Charge and changed things up a little bit on the layout. The Grey Knights one was a big one because that was the first one that we saw that really like kind of broke the reserve rules a bit.
Yeah.
And let you deep strike a lot of stuff, and also only had one troop as a requirement too.
That was neat. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, which makes sense for a highly elite, expensive army.
Right. Yes.
Now, that's the thing I liked about these, is it allows you to theme them a lot better. Like, orcs, you want to take a lot of troops. You use this formation that gives you more troops. You know, the Grey Knights, you want them to show up as the deep striking, you know, guys that come in and help clean up the mess, which is what they are on the fluff. Okay, you take a primary detachment of this, and then you take your detachment of Grey Knights, and they all come in, deep strike in, and help out. Like, it thematically, it makes these armies play a lot better, which I like.
Yeah, and that's one thing about these formations that we saw that, yeah, some of them had some really nice mechanical benefits, but you could also tell the focus was on making them really fluffy. And in some ways, that really worked, and it really did make you play an army that felt more like, you know, the faction that you're playing. Because let's face it, the old four-sword slot, there's no secret about this, or the combined arms attachment is built around the marine structure of, it's built around mm-hmm. Space Marines. It's organized the way Space Marine Army is organized. It's built to play that way, and that doesn't fit all flavors. And so having these other options really changes things up. However, you don't see nearly as many of the alternate detachment styles. In fact, we saw a couple in Dark Angels, but before that, the last ones we saw were in the Shield of Ball stuff.
Yeah.
That one was interesting because that was the first non-codex book to give us alternate detachments. And like for Tyranids, they really enjoyed having their.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's mainly just cool to have that many extra troops and elite slots.
And now that I look at it, it's the same as the Orc Horde. It just has different rules. But it's one, mm-hmm. one HQ, three troops. And then up to two additional HQs and six troops. So
yeah.
it fits a Horde army. That's exactly how it should be. But it was nice for Nids to suddenly have that option where they're not as restrained by the Force Org as they had been. And then Exterminatus gave us alternates for, two alternates for Blood Angels, because mm-hmm. it gave us one for the Archangels, so you could build an all elite, you know, Blood Angel army.
Right.
And it gave us the Flesh Terrors, because that gave us the option to put six drop pods in a Skitarii army when it eventually came out. Because let's face it, that's the only reason people take it.
I'm sure there are people out there that absolutely love the Flesh Terrors fluff and wanted to play that thematic army and are not power gaming it.
And if you are that person, please contact us. We'd love to have you on the show.
And I'll say that's been the downside of all of these have been is you don't see a lot of them unless people can use them for something.
Right.
That is powerful,
right?
Or can really turn their army around.
Speaking of turning armies around, the reason I say we didn't see too many of them after Shield of Ball was because the next book to come out was Necrons, and Necrons changed everything.
Yeah,
because Necrons didn't give us a standard, you know, alternate detachment; they gave us the Decurion, the Necron Decurion detachment, a sea change so powerful that every detachment after it has had this style is now called a Decurion style detachment.
Right.
And older style detachments pooped themselves.
Yes.
Yes.
Because now we had something, we had talked about the formations of formations.
Right.
But now we had something that was a formation of formations, but you could pick the formations. And some of the things you could pick weren't even formations, they just happened to be units that kind of slotted into this army structure and army theme as you wanted. So, for example, you know, you might have, you know, you could choose a Canoptic Harvest, which is a formation in this book, or you could use pick a unit of Deathmarks as one of your choices. And it also introduced something which is familiar to anybody who's building armies out of some of these newer codexes, the idea of a core detachment or core formation, mm-hmm. auxiliary formations, and command formations. And that kind, it's like slots for formations.
Right.
And the idea that you have this one thing that you have to take, you have the Reclamation Legion. That's your core formation. Every Decurion is built around that. You have to take it. And then beyond that, you have 1 to 10 choices per Reclamation Legion that you take that you can pad out with all these other choices. And then you get a bunch of bonuses for taking the Decurion that make everything in the Decurion better. That's on top of all the bonuses you get for the formations inside it.
Right. Yeah, it's a way to stack special rules on top of special rules and make everything kind of harmonize it a little bit better so you can build a lot of different fluffy type lists, also a lot of different just styles of lists. I mean, you can build a Reclamation, you can build a Decurion detachment that is, you know, heavy on destroyers or one that's heavy on, you know, Canoptic stuff or one that, I mean, you can go and have a close combat one, you can have a big shooty one, like it allows you a ton of flexibility.
And this is the first time we see that slots don't matter. Hence, now we're talking about detachments and formations instead of slots.
Yeah, right. It completely did away with the old, the Force Work chart.
And the trade-off, it was obviously some flexibility, but a lot of the things that you were going to take anyway, you were already taking in what is the core formation.
Mm-hmm.
So the only loss in flexibility is it's the other slots that you don't get to play around with as much, but there's still a lot of ways to take the same thing you took before.
Yeah.
And this pattern has continued on through, let's see, Necrons had it, Harlequins did not, Skitarii did not, Cult Mechanicus did not, Eldar did.
Yep.
And the Eldar Craft World one is a very interesting one. I think it's great because you can do a lot of very fluffy armies. And that was the first one to have multiple core choices.
Yes.
And then Khorne Demonkin had it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Space Marines had it.
Yep.
And
they had it, and they had it again, and they had their way with it.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is, we're bringing up the Space Marine one, not because it represents a change, because it's still a Dakirian-style mm-hmm. detachment. That hasn't changed. But what changed is suddenly there was a bonus for taking multiple core choices that in many ways, is just breaks the game wide open. And this was one of the first ones that's also, if I remember right, does not require you to take anything beyond the core. You can take just the core. Oh, and one core and one auxiliary, sorry.
Yeah.
So you do have to take one auxiliary. But then beyond that, you don't have to take, like the others, it's one to 12 auxiliaries per core. This one just said one core, one auxiliary, and then as many cores as you want. No limit on the number of auxiliaries, just go. So it was a bit looser formation, but it was also the fact that if you took two cores, suddenly you got like a third of your army for free. And that's not so much an issue with the structure of the detachment itself as much as the special rules for the detachment being
banana pants crazy.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. And then we saw that continued again in Dark Angels because they're trying to mimic the Space Marine one. So they get free stuff too. But then that book also had detachments, like actual detachments for Deathwing and Ravenwing beyond the formations for Deathwing and Ravenwing. But if you listen to our episode, there are some structural issues with that book.
Yeah.
So that is the history of from detachment, from our very first detachment or first force organization chart to the Dakirian style detachment of formations where we are today and where you're seeing a lot of armies building up to that. And in between there, we have a whole, there's a whole lot of stuff. But if you break it down, we're going to set Apocalypse formations aside because, again, they don't really affect the core game. And they haven't made a new one since they stopped making the Apocalypse Warzone books. And some of them have been overwritten with non-Apocalypse versions, like the Green Tide.
Yeah.
And so we're going to set those aside. But other than that, it basically breaks down into six categories. And the six categories are the detachments that everybody can take, core rulebook detachments, then codex-specific detachments, formations, and I'm going to break formations into two categories. One is formations where they are extremely fixed.
Okay.
And then one formations where you have a flexibility inside them. And when I say separate those two out, it's like one is the Tau Firebase support cadre is an example of a fixed formation. It is one unit of this, two units of this. The two units of this must be built this way, and that is the formation.
Right.
And then the flexible formation is one that is 3 to 5 units from this list of units, where it's basically like a mini force org chart inside itself, but not actually a detachment, not a standard detachment. The fifth one is the formation of formations, and then the final one is the Dakirian. So starting off with the first category, and we've talked a lot about this one because it was the one that was around the longest time, and we've already discussed some of the issues with it. But the detachment, the what we now call the combined arms detachment and the allied detachment. And, if somebody says, well, what about Cities of Death or what about Planet Strike, where they have alternate versions of that? If it's something that's available to you, whatever army you play, and it's just focusing on like what game mode you're playing, but it doesn't matter what faction you're in, then I'm going to count it in this. But it's
a universal kind of detachment.
Yeah, universal detachment's a good way to put state it. Obviously, this is when we've been doing our Know Your Slot series. That's the detachment we've been building towards and talking about how your choices there are fit inside that. And that is still, let's face it, for a number of armies, Tau, Chaos Demons, Chaos Space Marines, Astra Militarum,
Sisters of Battle.
Sisters of Battle. And technically, I mean, Tyranids have another option, mm-hmm. but, so we won't include Tyranids because they do have another option thanks to Shield of Ball. But yeah, Sisters of Battle, for those five armies, that is your style of army construction. That mm-hmm. is what you have. And most of those, with the Tau Firebase support cadre set aside, they don't even have much in the way of formations. I mean, Chaos has the Hellbrute data slate that they released.
Yeah. Kinda.
And there's like the Khorne one that is like the Karn's Butcher Horde, which is ridiculous.
Right.
And really unusable. And so, I mean, they don't have any realistic options for formation. So if you are building one of those five armies, mm-hmm. that is what you have to build with. That's it. So if you're used to building, you know, you build your armies the same way, and it, in some ways it's restricting because some of the slots are better than other, you know, some of your options in some slots are better than others. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles. You don't really have anything else, but it's a tried and true style of army building. And there are some armies where, depending on how you're building it, like, for example, Eldar, if you're building a jet bike army, there's no benefit in using the Decurion style detachment there. Combined arms is still your best bet.
Yeah, the only benefit is if you wanted to take some things as single items that aren't formations that are part of the Decurion.
But in general, that's what you use your slots for anyway.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah, it doesn't really affect you too badly. So, if for some reason the benefits of your Decurion or Codex specific detachment don't work for you, or if you feel that objective secured, and in a lot of cases of the faction specific detachments, sometimes the trade off is not as good as objective secured.
Yeah.
Combined arms still might be the way to go too. It's still good. Objective secured is a fantastic rule. There is nothing wrong with it. And rerolling your warlord trait regardless of what book it's from also
is very,
very
useful.
Yeah. So I think as you mentioned, Dennis, it's very easy for new players to pick up. You don't, you know, there's not a lot of math. You don't have to buy specific units. Mm-hmm. You just, well, of course, if you don't really care, you can just play Unbound, which I guess would be type zero. Type zero, no detachments at all.
Right.
But
just throw models on the table.
Oh, Age of Sigmar?
See what happens.
It's Age of Sigmar.
No, there's still points.
Oh, yes, we would still have points, but I don't think the combined arms detachment is necessarily going anywhere, although I could, depending on where it goes, once all the codexes are updated, there could be a day where it does. I don't know, but for now, it's still a good way to build an army.
I think they're always going to keep that option around just because there needs to be a unifying, like just kind of standard way to do it for the game. And then all of the specific, you know, individual codex versions of it. But I think you're always still going to have the default combined arms detachment option.
Okay.
I just think it's too ingrained.
I think it'll change in the future, but yeah.
Yeah. I think it'll always be around in some form or another.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Although, the only possibility I would see is if they do update the core rules to have the generic combined arms detachment actually follow like a sort of Decurion style where you're working off of a core formation and then you're using auxiliaries and commands.
I hate to give GW ideas, though, but if they were to do that, they would have to go back and re-update all of the pre-Necron codexes.
No, not necessarily. No. I think what he's saying is, like, you have a formation that is one HQ, or, like, you have a core formation that is, two troops, a fast attack, and a heavy, and one HQ. You have a command detachment that is, like, one additional HQ, and then you could have, like, two fast attack, two heavy support as your
auxiliaries.
Yeah, as your auxiliaries. Yeah.
I don't know. You're still going to have the type of troops out there. And I think as long as you still have things listed in the codex as this is HQ, this is troop, this is fast, this is heavy, you might as well have that formation out. The combined arms attachment to be able to just say, here, take these. Because you still have to have a way to identify them to be able to say where they fit into the other side. So,
but on the other hand, it would give armies that have, doing something like that would be interesting because it would give armies that have a glut of units in one slot or other, like Tyranids and Elites, or Space Marines and Elites. You know, the ability to build an army that might have more Elite slots, but you're giving up slots in other places. Yeah. And it would give you like a consistent style of armies, assuming they continue with the Decurion, which, however, you know, fits some armies better than others because, again, the two newest armies, Mechanicus and Skitarii, don't have that at all. That, you know, it's not even an option.
Yeah.
So, and I, maybe it's just because the lack of units that they have, which is more of an argument that they should have been in one book to begin with. So next we'll move on to the second category, which is faction specific detachments. Now, this would include everything from, as we said, the, like the Orc Horde and the Nemesis Strike Force to like the Oathsworn detachment, household detachments for Imperial Knights, where that's kind of how they have to be built because they don't fit inside a normal force org at all. Inquisition fits under that because, again, they don't fit under a standard force org. Harlequins, Skitarii, that's the only option they have for building a non-formation army.
My take on those is it's your only option. It's probably your best option. But for a lot of those, the standard core detachments are better than your faction-specific ones. I know Richard will disagree.
It depends on what the rule is or exactly how you want to build your army and what slot flexibility it gives you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't actually use a lot of times the Tyranid one out of Leviathan. I still use the Combined Arms Detachment because objective security is that good of a rule. And the benefit of re-rolling my instinctual behavior, most of the time I'm going to try and plan on not having to roll that in the first place because it's a pain in the butt.
And I guess I think that's my point is the core rules, the core detachment objective security is so good, and especially we play a lot of small point games, you're never going to run out of slots in a core detachment.
Right.
True.
Right. Although I will totally deep strike first turn with Grey Knights.
Yeah, see, that's one where Grey Knights, I think their benefit is definitely outweighs what they're going to get out of objective security. The only case where you wouldn't do that is if you decided, well, I'm going to make a Purifier and Strike Force, or Purifier Squad and Strike Squad heavy army, and I'm just going to like try to throw as many Elite Power Armor guys on the table, in which case Combined Arms is probably your better bet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Strike Squad guys actually have Deep Strike also.
Oh, that's true.
So that doesn't actually preclude them from...
Okay, fair enough.
From being in
that detachment. Well, Purifiers are Elite anyway, so yeah. Okay.
Right.
All right, bad example on my part.
So...
Yeah, so that's what... But again, it's very faction-specific as to whether one choice is better than the other. Like, with the Orc Horde... I think having access to more slots for boys is not a bad thing. But I don't know if the Hammer of Wrath, if you roll 10 on your charge, is worth trading for objective secured when you can get a lot of the same things out of just bolting on a formation.
Yep.
I think it took them a little while because you can definitely see that the first 7th edition books, Orcs and
Space Wolves,
and you know, the first couple ones that came out, the benefit was not really that great for taking that. Like, even in the Leviathan Rising, the Leviathan detachment for Tyranids was like, all right, I could see it. It's really more I'm taking this for the extra slots, not for the benefit. I think it took them a little while to figure out how to kind of properly balance that and say, okay, what is worth trading objectives secure for? What benefit would make it where it's a 50-50 choice? And it's at that point purely up to, okay, what am I building? You know, and is this better than this? Rather than, oh, this is always better, so I will always take choice.
I will agree with that, because if they had made all of them where it was a 50-50 choice of objective secured or something else, I would probably love having like more options there, but it just seemed like the extra
It seems like they've all swung either one way where it's definitely not worth it, or the Grey Knights one where really, why are you ever taking a Combined Arms detachment? You should always take their specific formation. So, yeah, I think they've tried to kind of zero in on that a little bit better, and I think the Decurion-style detachments, I think, do a better job of kind of targeting that a little bit.
I mean, for example, the Mefrit Dynasty cohort, which was the last one before the Necron Codex was redone. And so for like a month or so, people actually may have tried to use this, had the benefit of you reroll rolls of one when making reanimation protocols for troops in this formation, and you could have up to 8 troop choices. So if you wanted to go immortal and warrior heavy, that's actually not a bad option. But we're going to see that again in the Reclamation Legion because that's their bonus too, is rerolling ones. So, yeah, that, again, that's one where, is it worth trading for, is more troops and rerolling reanimation protocols worth trading, you know, giving away objectives secured?
Eh.
Yeah. It depends on how you, it also depends on what your goal to play the game is. If you are playing to table your opponent, maybe you do trade off objective secured. I mean, or if you really want, if you need those extra slots for something, you don't care about objective secured. Yeah. And, you know, again, these are also very, as you pointed out, Dennis, you don't see these much beyond people wanting to game them. And the Flesh Terrors one is probably the most egregious because it's free, or, you know, it's not free, but it's drop pods for any army that doesn't have access to drop pods.
Yep.
And you really only see it with Skatari. I guess you could see it. I think I've seen it once or twice with Imperial Guard as well in army lists online. But yeah, generally it's Skatari, but you're even seeing it with people splashing in like Dark Angels just to get, like, I'll take a combined arms or maybe even just an allied detachment to get one drop pod to put one unit in. But you especially see it with, like I said, the Flesh Terrors one has been really commonly expanded and exploited into being the Flesh Terrors drop pod strike force.
Yeah.
So moving on from there, we get into the strict, I guess, strict and loose formations. We'll call them this. The strict formation is your formation where you have little to no flexibility. You might have flexibility on war gear. You might have flexibility on model count, but not always.
Mm-hmm.
The original Advent calendar formations were very much this strict because they were built to sell bundles of models too.
It's like, I think percentage-wise, this is still like the majority of formations.
I would agree with
probably,
that.
Probably, yeah.
Although you're starting to see a little bit of a shift towards some of the loose formations, but the strict formations, like you said, they're, so even in the Space Marine Codex, I'm going to go through like their formations real quick. So you've got like the air defense for anti-air defense force, hunters and stalkers, the strike force ultra, a captain, 2 Terminator squads, 2 Terminator assault squads, a Vendred, a Storm Raven, a Land Raider, Crusader or Redeemer. That's all the flexibility you've got. And then they even have rules on, they all have, like the captain has to be in Terminator armor. They all have to be on their dedicated transports or in deep strike reserve. The Reclusium Command Squad, which is a chaplain and a command squad, and they have to be, the chaplain can't leave the command squad, and they have to take a Razorback because, damn it, that's the bundle we sold you. The Stormwing, 1 Storm Raven and 2 Storm Talon. The Suppression Force, 1 unit of Whirlwinds, 1 unit of Landspeeders. The Whirlwinds have to have at least 2 models. So again, I'd say about half the formations in the Space Marine Codex are still strict formations. Yeah. A lot of the Data Slate ones are strict formations. Most of the codexes, they're strict formations. I think like the Necron ones are, I think the only one that's remotely flexible is the Reclamation Legion.
Yeah.
Yeah, because most of them are a unit of these, a unit of these, a unit of these. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's still the majority, but we're seeing more of the more flexible ones starting to pop up. And there, it's really is the trade-off is you either have, you give up flexibility for having the extra rules. And it really comes down to, is the cost of the formation and the, what you give up by not being able to take other things worth what you're getting out of it? And that is really on a case, but there is no general rule for that. Like the, Canoptic Harvest. That is a relatively cheap formation, and what you get out of it is fantastic.
Right. I mean, even the Reclamation Legion is a pretty good one because you've got everything you get out of it is pretty solid, you know, and there's no like requirement that you have to take something that you don't want to take. But there are some in like the Khorne Demonkin where it's like, okay, the Slaughter Cult, is that the main one? The core one?
Yeah.
Like, you have to take Possessed. And if you don't want to not take Possessed, you really can't. You have to use something else.
Or if you want to take more than 1 unit of cultists for cheap blood points, well, you can take what, 2?
2. Yeah.
You want to take three? Nope.
Got to use different. Yeah, got to use different ones. So it really is just kind of case by case, because them being so restrictive, if you want to take certain units, you just can't do it. You have to go a different way. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It makes it – I'm a fan of more options. You know, so if there's the option to do it this way or the option to do it this way, that's fine. As long as I have the ability to still use those troops some way, then, you know, I'll look at it and decide whether I'm willing to trade, do the trade-off to not have this unit for the extra rules. And you're right, it is just
– Will you pay the tax, basically?
Yeah, it really is just up to what you're doing that day.
And I know it's been, like, on a lot of these units, it's been kind of teased that, like, oh, this is Games Workshop's plan to unload this model from the warehouse. Like, the Reclamation Legion, which kind of straddles the line between strict and loose, because it does have options of, like, 0-2 Lich Guard, 0-3 Monoliths, 2-8 units of Warriors, 1-4 units of Immortals, and then it's got 1-3 units of Tomb Blades.
Right.
And it's like, Tomb Blades. Nobody was taking Tomb Blades before this. Well, it's the Tomb Blade tax. You buy your Tomb Blades, and then you can. Of course, Tomb Blades are actually much better.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Turns out, hey, you do want to take Tomb Blades.
However, the possessed tax will definitely.
Yeah.
Or the Viper tax in the various Eldar core detachments.
The Harlequin ones.
Yeah. Where, I mean, again, those are, like even the Eldar ones, they're relatively strict. It's like you've got a little bit of flexibility, but not much. The most flexibility you have generally is how many in each unit you take.
Right.
Yeah. And war gear for that, you know, for those guys that have it.
But if the thing I like about them, if they give you enough strict formations, you can still build anything you want to build. Like the Eldar is a good example of that, that you can basically build out of the strict formations whatever fluffy, flexible aspect army you want to make. It's just that you have to make the decision to go this route and use these formations, or this route and these formations, and not really do a lot of mixing and matching.
But it makes the flexible strict.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's like you still have the ability to go in and build what you want to build. You just have to build it a very specific way.
Now, on the other hand, you've got the what we're calling the loose formations. And like here's one. The First Company Task Force from Space Codex Space Marines. 3-5 units chosen from the following list. Terminator Squad, Terminator Assault Squad, Stern Guard Veteran Squad, Vanguard Veteran Squad. And that's it. That's the only restrictions. It's 3-5 units taken from this list. That's almost basically an elite slot, you know, just giving somebody 3-5 elite slots and telling them to go have fun with it. Those formations I don't like as much because, A, sometimes the bonuses aren't really geared towards the units included. Like this one, the units, the special rules are Fear and Fearless. And at the start of the game, you nominate one unit in the enemy army, and units in this formation have preferred enemy against it. And then enemy units subtract 2 from their leadership if they're within 12 inches of at least 3 units from this formation. None of those rules really say this is specific.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically building a little block that is like, yeah, that guy over there, fuck that guy, and that's it.
Yeah.
But then again, we're talking about Codex Space Marines, and what are Space Marines, but not the, like, universal wrench, ultra-flexible, build the army to take on whatever we need to.
That is true. That is true.
And the other thing you said, that did have the one function of, like, messing with one guy. Anyone can splash that in if they've got the points for it.
True. That is true. But yeah, I'm looking at the Necron one, and almost everything they have there is a, you know, like the Reclamation Legion is, like I said, it kind of straddles the line between strict and loose. And the only other thing they have is the Living Tomb, which is an obelisk and 0-2 monoliths. I don't think that, I mean, that's, why, first off, why are you taking an obelisk anyway?
It's not.
Actually, the obelisk was the least bad of their Lord of War options.
Right.
But it's just some of those, it's like, it's almost not a formation. It's like, it's so flexible in that case. The 10th Company Scout Squad, where it's like 3-5 units of scouts or scout bikers, and you can take a Tellion if you want.
Right.
And it's like, that's a formation. I mean, I get that they're trying, I mean, thematically, 3 units of scouts, okay, I can, fluff-wise, I can see that. And it's a restricted enough list of what you can take that you can gear the rules specifically to scouts. But there are some cases where it just seems like, that is a really wide open. But fortunately, that does seem to be, those formations do seem to be in the minority at present. And I hope it kind of stays that way. I don't like them as much as the strict ones, especially balance wise.
Yeah. No, they're harder to balance just because you have to make them more flexible, which means there's more room for abuse. You know, cause like you said, the Space Marine one's a great example. It's this elite, this elite, this elite, or this elite. Okay. Is anybody really going to make the argument that like Stern Guard veterans, that you'd rather have those over Terminators, or that they do fast, that they even do remotely the same battlefield role? So you have to make those command benefits a little bit more flexible, which inherently makes them more difficult to balance because you have to just plan for more things. And I agree with that. I think I'd rather have the strict, like, this is your Terminator formation, and it does this battlefield role, so it's going to give you benefits to do this battlefield role, rather than, take some elites. They just go in here as this package.
Yeah. All right, moving on then, we've got the formation of formations, which you don't see that much. You've seen a couple in...
I've ran one.
Well, you've run one in the Harlequins. Yeah, because again, if you aren't doing their now theirs is their formation of formations is it actually built from the various formations in the book?
Actually, it's got. Nah, you're right. It's more there's the detachment.
Yeah, well, there's
it's just more specific.
Well, there's the detachment, and then there's the formation that is strictly you one unit of this, one unit.
Yes, it's the one of everything.
Yeah, so that's a strict a strict formation. But like you see some of those in like the campaign books that they did. I know Wah Gazgul had those. Obviously, Rising Leviathan had them.
They seem to be popular, I guess, right when the new books started coming out before the big detachments where, like you said, more of the supplement books had them.
Right. Although the one we do see, and again, it was only released in White Dwarf, but the War Convocation is the biggest one mm-hmm. comes to mind. Now, technically, that one is a formation of detachments and formation because, like, there's a Skitarii formation, a knight detachment, and a Mechanicus detachment. So there's still some flexibility. It is such a weird corner case. But generally, for most of these, the multi-formation formations, whether it's a strict list of formations you have to take, they're really not playable in most games. They're meant to be big apocalypse armies.
Yeah. Yeah, I had... like the Grey Knights have one that was, I believe, in White Dwarf also. And I think I pointed it out and it was almost 5,000 points.
Ugh. That's just crazy. I mean, so again, you are not going to see those in most games of anything at tournament level or lower.
Right.
So they're really not much of an issue, but they are out there. So we did want to include them for completeness. And then finally, there's the Dakirian detachments. And we've already talked about them at length. But, you know, there's always a little bit more to say. It is interesting to see. But with the Dakirian detachments, obviously that is the trend going forward. You know, we've seen the change from 6th edition to 7th edition to 7.5 effectively with the introduction of the Dakirian style. And most of this latter half of 7th edition latter compared to when it was released seems to indicate that that's the direction they're going in.
Well, and as we talked about the, I guess, fluffy detachments for each codex, I think this does a lot better job of kind of encouraging you to play the fluff-wise because, I mean, the command benefits are normally pretty good. I mean, not always great because Eldar 1, I love the 5-inch or the 6-inch auto run, but as you pointed out, Rob, with the jet bikes don't run, so I get no benefit from using them. But I really like the thing of... kind of changing it to core, auxiliary, and command, and I think that that's a direction they're going to keep going.
Well, I like it because it seems like it's grouping things more by, rather than kind of by the arbitrary, and maybe not completely arbitrary is the wrong word, but the way we've always done it with the combined arms attachment of HQ, troop, elite, heavy, fast, it's grouping it more by battlefield role, and I think that makes a little more sense. Because you see in some of these, like, you know, your core stuff, like, that you're always going to have. Like, you're always going to have a leader and some mooks. And these things that are always going to be there. And then you kind of add in, okay, do you want to add in a shooty element? take this formation or this slot. If you want to add in close combat, here's this. If you want to add in fast close combat, here's this. And because like in the Demonkin one especially, you see a lot of kind of at first weird pairings of stuff in formations where it's like bikes and hellhounds. That's corn dogs. That's weird. But when you think about it, well, they're both fast moving assault units. So you put them together, or Terminators and Blood Crushers. Well, okay, they don't really work together, but they do the same battlefield role. So you add them to add that element to your list. And I like that style of thinking about it a little bit better, just because it allows you more flexibility in each army to kind of say, okay, if you're wanting to do this, then add this, or add these elements, add this element to it. And I think it's going to make it, going forward, there's going to be a lot of really cool flexibility for other armies as they go along.
And two things you said with that part one is, I think we've talked amongst ourselves of the combined arms detachment is a very Space Marine thought mentality. And it was great, and it still works really well for Space Marines, but for like Eldar, Orcs, they don't have that same mentality. So going to a Decurion detachment, I think, works really well for them.
Yeah.
The other one you brought up was Mooks. Troops kind of got out of favor at the start of, 7th edition when everyone became scoring.
Yeah.
It's like, why do we need troops anymore? Everyone's scoring, so everyone can have like objective secured. And you started seeing less and less troops on the table, and it was just a game of your big stuff. And now this Decurion detachment is forcing you to actually play with troops again, so it's nice to see them back on the table.
That is true. And sometimes the Eldar one is a perfect example where it forces, the craft world host, again, like you said, it really only benefits you if you're not using jet bikes. So you're probably using the Guardian battle host. And yeah, that's a troop heavy detachment.
I know. And I'm still slightly sad because when I did Eldar, I used my Dire Avengers as my troops and not the Guardians, because the Dire Avengers were just better.
They were.
So that's why in the past couple weeks I've been putting together Guardians.
Well, it's changed how you've had to build your army. But then you thematically, fluff-wise, it makes more sense. So it's kind of doing what the previous version of the Space Marine Codex started doing, which was force you to play fluffy by just providing the rules to make your army fluffier and give you a benefit for doing it. So I think that's good. And I think... And Dennis and I have put together craft world host lists that are very different, but they are both falling under the same army structure. Mm-hmm. That it's like, and I've looked at mine. It's like I could technically fit mine inside a combined arms detachment if I decided to change it up, but I don't really think I need to. I kind of like where this one is, although actually now looking back to it, I don't know if I could, because I was going to take a Dire Avenger Shrine, and that's three units of Dire Avengers.
Right.
And there's three units of Guardians and the Battle Host.
Yes.
And then I would also have a unit of Rangers, and that would be seven troops. Okay, so never mind. Mine doesn't fit inside a combined arms detachment. Math is hard.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
But the only problem that I have, or the kind of danger I see with this style of detachments, is... I'm sure there's probably a temptation from GW to be like, okay, this compulsory detachment, what can we include in there to sell models?
Oh, I'm sure they're already doing that.
Right, but and that's my fear, is that if you start getting into the point of going, okay, let's just make it where you have to take the crap units or whatever, you know, to sell these models or whatever, that's the only thing I'm kind of concerned about, is that when they're kind of dictating what you have to be able to use... there's always the possibility that could get abused.
Well, or there's the flip side of that where you have the the Gladius Strike Force from Codex Space Marines, where the benefit for building the battle company, because that's what they want you to do. You read that and they want you to build a battle company. The benefit from doing that is A, getting people to try to find cheaper options for like the fast attack unit that you have to take in there, and also, the benefit from taking that is so good that you're going to want to take it, which means suddenly you're buying drop pods and riserback kits to try to fill out your, you know, all your free stuff that you're getting. And so whether it's forcing you to take units that might be subpar because they want to move them off shelves, or by making a benefit by giving you so much free stuff that, you know, and I'm sure with the war convocation, there was some conscious thought putting into, hey, well, what if we want to get Skitarii players to buy Mechanicus stuff, or we want Mechanicus players to buy Skitarii stuff, which, to be fair, if they're Mechanicus players, they're probably buying both anyway. But then we also want them to buy at least one knight. Mm-hmm. So why don't we just give them a formation that makes them buy all those things? And, oh, instead of putting like a Skitarii detachment in there, we'll put the formation that requires them to have one of every unit from the Skitarii book, so we'll know we'll move at least one of each one of those kits, and we'll move a knight. It'll probably be one of the newer knights, because they'll want the missile pod option and stuff like that. And then they'll buy a handful of the Mechanicus kits, because they have to have that. So, I mean, and I don't want to begrudge them that. They're a business. No, they're trying to sell models. But, and I don't even think those are necessarily so horribly blatant, but at the same time, it's just like, yeah, you hope the mentality isn't just to move models into hell with game balance.
Well, and if they can continue to develop things that promote the fluff within the game and balance, you know, and make armies that are fun to play and things like that, then I don't really have a problem with it. Because you're right, they're a business. They want to sell models. They want to sell you new things. That's why Flayed Ones went from one of the worst units in the game to one of the better assault units in the game. Because, well, we decided to rebalance things because nobody was buying them. Like, I get that, and that's part of it. That's always been part of the game. But I just hope that they don't start doing as just kind of a naked, wait a minute, okay, now we can just retool these formations to move specific product rather than what's actually fluffy for the game.
Well, and I think, like, Dark Angels players, I know there were probably plenty of Ravenwing and Deathwing players that are suddenly like, shit, I have to buy TAC Marines now. And I have no doubt that, you know, A, yes, it's very fluffy for them to be supported by or supporting tactical, you know, standard Codex tactical Marines. But at the same time, it does feel a little bit like, you weren't buying this before? Well, now you have to.
Yeah.
Well, it also goes back to seeing more troops on the table, which is kind of, I think, will help balance the game if everybody has to have troops.
True.
And also, it is a way to bring focus to units that might have been overlooked before. I mean, Tomb Blades. You know, we've talked about those. They're actually one of the better units in the game, for, you know, or at least in the Necron Codex. But if you didn't have to take them in a Reclamation Legion, would you still?
I think so.
You think?
I think you would.
I think that, but
I think that the benefits of them being jet bikes, the fact that their weapons are better, like, and the upgrades are just so much cheaper. For 20 points, I think? You're basically paying 5 points extra over a warrior for a better gun and a lot more flexibility.
Okay.
Like, that was one where, yes, like, in the previous version, you know, you never would have looked at them. But I think they made them enough better that people are going to take them regardless.
Or I also think of, like, the Vol's Wrath batteries, which were never bad choices necessarily.
No, I'd always wanted to try them. I saw, like, one at the store once. I was like, do I want
to
pick that up?
But you had to, especially when Wraith Knights were heavy support, and Vol's Wrath was heavy support,
and Fire Prisms were heavy support.
It's like somebody's gonna lose in that competition. Warwalkers were heavy.
Warwalkers and the Dark Reapers.
Yeah,
so there was just so much decent heavy support in Eldar. Yeah.
And so you don't have to make those choices.
Yeah, so that's when we're having an overloaded armies with overloaded slots actually really benefit from these detachments in these formation styles, because it lets you put a little bit more focus on units that might get ignored otherwise. Or being, it's like, I want to take a Lord of, like Dennis's list that he's working on, I want a Wraith Knight as a Lord of War, but I also want to use the Avatar. Well, I can't do that in a standard army if I'm using a combined arms attachment, but I can in the Craft World host.
Yep.
And so he's doing that. So he's got, what, 3 Lords of War in that army?
Yep.
Which, okay, yeah, we're kind of groaning at that. But at the same time, but what he's doing with it is he's building a Footdar list that's focused around the Avatar making his guys awesome. And so it's fluffy and it's going to be powerful, but it's something that you literally could not do without doubling up on combined arms attachments. And we haven't even really talked about combined arms attachments. The fact that in 6th edition, you couldn't double up on them until you were at 2,000 points or more, or It was never really clear if it was over 2000. Like, did you double up at 2001? Yeah. Or was it at 2000 and up, which then gave us the weirdness of the 1999 plus one tournament.
Yeah.
Which was, and I think something we do need to brief, I don't want to dip too deep into, but we do want to briefly touch on regarding the chronology of formations is that as formations became part of core 40K, and as faction-specific detachments and more, the player base has not always adjusted terribly, especially the competitive side, because it, when everyone was building their army the same way, under the same detachment style, it was very easy to figure, you know, to kind of weigh two armies against one another.
Right.
And, although, yeah, the points values have always been kind of wonky and not necessarily, you know, 13 points of Marine, 14 points of Marine is not the same as 14 points somewhere else. You know, that kind of thing. Even like 14 points of Chaos Marine versus 14 points of...
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, that, but you could still kind of vaguely do a weighing back and forth. Allies, adding the Allied detachment, threw that out, or, you know, threw that all out of whack. Adding the advent formations. I remember there was a big thing. It was like, are events not allowing formations? We're only allowing core rulebook stuff. Or the 1999 plus one event where it's like, we're allowing 2000 points, but hell no, you're not doubling up on combined arms or on the core primary detachment. So fuck you, Tyranids players.
Yeah.
Cause that was the main army that really wanted it at 2000 points. Although you're seeing, then everyone decided, well, we're going to shift down to 1850 and make it a non-issue.
So, right, which is probably the best way to handle it.
Honestly, yeah. And now the main thing is, okay, well, formations are part of the game. Detachments are part of the game. This Dakarian thing is part of the game. So now it's, you know, it's like, okay, well, now it's three. Okay, we're putting a limit of three detachments, which we've been doing at our events. And it's rare that you see people going over that.
I think I only did that once.
Well, yeah, with your super friends list where you had allied detachments for every...
Phoenix Lord.
Yeah, and then a primary Dark Eldar detachment. So it is doable, though. Yeah, you don't see too much of that, and they're even talking about expanding it to four, possibly. I don't remember how the vote... I think they voted to keep it at three, but allow duplicates now. But, yeah, it's just... I think unless you're going crazy with, I think they mostly put that three limit in for people, not allowing them to splash in, oh, a bunch of Inquisitors or an Inquisitor and an Allied Detachment and an Assassin and a Primary and an Imperial Knight. Because you could easily do all of those things if you had no limit on it.
Yeah, but I don't know that that's necessarily a bad or unbalanced thing either, though.
What, allowing all those?
No, I mean, like saying, like if you're building a Forces of the Imperium list, that is, two Inquisitors and their retinues and four Assassins and a Knight. Is that, if you have a same point limit as everybody else, is that really that much more broken than Space Marines getting all their vehicles for free or does Cult Mechanicus list getting all of their upgrades for free?
Yeah, like, and see, I think, and again, that's not necessarily an issue with the Dakarian style structure or the structure of any of these.
Right, yeah.
It is an issue. That's an issue with the individual formations being not terribly well thought out as far as balance or being wonderfully well thought out for selling models.
Right.
So I want to pose a question to you because we are starting to get up near our, you know, finishing up our recording time. So, first question I want to pose to the three of you is, do you like what the addition of all these different types of detachments and especially formations has done to the game? Do you like where it has taken the game to this point?
I do. I think it's made it a lot more flexible. I think it's made it a lot more easy to be able to build fluffy lists or, you know, if you want to build the uber competitive lists. You can do that. I think it's opened up a lot of different options, and I'm a fan of more options.
I'll pretty much have to echo what Kevin said there. I mean, I like how it's opened everything up. Sometimes I find you can come up with weird combinations that I don't think should be out there, but that's kind of the state we're in with formations and Battle Brothers and allowing all sorts of different things.
Yeah, same here.
Okay, so basically, you really are spoiled for choice between the sheer number of factions and sub-factions and detachments and formations out there and the many combinations you can put them in. So, yeah, you can, and you're seeing that even at tournaments, even at GTs, you're seeing a lot of flexibility in the armies that are brought, and that is fantastic to see. So for the most part, I think I'm with you. I think it is better. I think having more flexibility keeps the game from feeling stagnant. But yeah, the game really was felt like it was stagnating around the end of 5th edition. And 6th edition, you know, the Allied Detachment really did kind of help that, and especially with keeping codexes regularly updated. So that is, I think it is a good thing overall, but my only concern is that they keep the formations reasonable as far as the benefits for them. Mm. For the most part, they have, but I think in there's a couple of, and we'll be broken records if we keep mentioning, but there are a couple of egregious examples that really should have been rethought, but it is what it is. So we'll just have to make do with it. Okay. So obviously we don't have any issue with formations or for anything like that. So I will go ahead and ask this. Going forward, are there any changes you would want to see made to the way formations are handled, or do you like where they are now with them? I mean, it seems like we're pretty happy with the Dakirian style, but is there anywhere you'd want to see them go or not go?
I think the big thing would be, I like the, as we mentioned earlier, the more kind of fixed formations, because I think they're a little bit easier to balance and a little bit easier to kind of determine what role they're going to play in the battlefield, as opposed to ones that are like, choose any three elites and, you know, choose any of these six options. I think that if you're going to have formations, you need to make sure that they're kind of honed in on a very specific thing and do a very specific job.
I'll say that I really love the Dakirian detachments and would love to see every faction get one, mm-hmm. or at least all the major factions. I mean, Skitarii, Harlequins, I don't consider them major factions. They're kind of just...
They wouldn't have enough options to fill one out anyway.
They're just sub-factions. As for the formations, I'd kind of like to see them either get rid of the formation of formations or just put Apocalypse Only on it, or just...
I think Apocalypse Only at this point is kind of a non entity anymore.
Well,
I think,
then bring back some of the Apocalypse Only ones so I can use them.
I'm totally right. with you there.
Yeah. I like the... I think the state that it is at now is pretty good. I can't think of anything specific that I think they really need to change. Just, you know, keeping an eye on what those bonuses are and keeping those relatively balanced.
Yeah, I think I'm with all of you. Just watching the benefits of the detachments, and also, Dennis, I'm definitely with you in that I hope all the armies get updated to that, because that's the one thing you really do feel is the armies that have been updated with the Dakirian style definitely have edges because of the benefits they can get over the armies that don't, even over the earlier 7th edition armies, because Orcs, Space Wolves, Blood Angels, Dark Eldar, that they'd all, I think, benefit from having access to that kind of army flexibility. So, and then of course the like Chaos Space Marines getting some really good formations and really good benefits to building your army a certain way would go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you could use something like the Dakirian style to even build, like, if depending on, like, you could do theoretically four different cores based on your four Chaos Gods, mm-hmm. and suddenly someone can build that Legion style army that they've always wanted and have that particular rule set. I think you could address a lot of the issues with some of those older codexes with the right style of formation, but it does have to be done with some sense of fair play and common sense.
Yeah.
I feel like, thinking about it, actually, one change that I think I would probably do, and I don't know if... I feel like this, visually, like the graphic layout of how the Dakirian is mm-hmm. on the page, I feel like this could take up less space.
I'm with you there. I think the Dark Angel one takes up a little bit less, but it's still a very similar layout. The Space Marine one is a bit more compact, but it still spills over onto two pages.
I feel like once you get this set up, I mean, you're talking about formations that are already like their own little data sheets, and these little boxes are kind of repeating that same information.
Yeah.
I don't know that you necessarily have to put all of these individual choices in these boxes.
From an ease
you
of building,
you can take these formations.
From an ease of building, though, I do kind of like having all of that information on that one page.
Yeah.
I don't have to flip back to page 60 to see this formation, then page 75.
Well, I look at the way it was done in the Necron book. That part that says Necron to Kyrian detachment could have been at the bottom of the next page, and then that whole page, instead of having it span the bottom of two pages, it could have been all done on one page.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Fair enough. With the benefits at the bottom.
And, yeah. And there's like empty spaces here and there. Yeah, like, there could be better ways to the one in the Space Marine Codex is actually laid out. I mean, because closer of to how much of what they have, it's laid out in a way that
I still think like the spot image of the Crux Terminatus there is kind of a waste of
wow.
But I get what you're saying. They're getting better at arranging it, but they could have done it a bit more cleanly and make it easier to read.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know that like the necessarily they needed to like put the lines in there to like
Richard is a graphic designer.
I'm a graphic designer, so visually like you know, better use of space could have happened on some of them.
Agreed.
So, well, I truthfully like the lines on there because it also makes me think of the Combined Arms Detachment because it has lines between all of its
stuff.
That
is true. That is true.
And this is trying to emulate that.
Whereas the Space Marine one kind of breaks from that.
Yeah.
Well, the Space Marines break everything.
They do.
Yeah.
Okay. So last question, and then we'll move on to hobby progress and then finish up. Last question is, do you have a favorite formation or detachment?
Or both.
I really do like the Decurion. I think
just the actual Necron
Decurion. Yeah, just the actual Necron Decurion. It gives you everything you need in your main in your main Reclamation Legion, everything you want to build your list with anything. Tomb Blades I think are so good that it doesn't feel like a tax for them to include them in there. And then you have the flexibility beyond that with all of the additional little, auxiliary choices to be able to customize and make several different styles of lists. Like, you can do a super combat heavy focused one and go with your Canoptic Harvest and your Flayed Ones and actually have a pretty viable close combat Necron army. Or you can go through and do, Death Marks and extra things and have a really shooty heavy one. So I think that one, I still think that style of detachment, of Decurion detachment, is still easily the best one.
All right.
I'm going to go similar but different. I'm going to go with the Eldar Craft Worlds Decurion style detachment because, kind of echoing the same thing, it gives you a ton of flexibility. It kind of brings back the troops, and you can build it so many different ways. I'll also extend and say my favorite formation probably right now would be Hero's Path from the Harlequins.
You're one of each of your
characters. My one of each
characters.
Of Solitaire, Death Jester, and Shadow Seer just running around on their own because it's a lot of fun.
I like the Tyranid Skyblight Swarm. It's one of those great ones that gets you objective secured outside of the Combined Arms Detachment, and it gives you the option to take like just a bunch of it. It's flexible enough in the size of the units that can be a lot of points.
Yeah.
And you can practically build almost an entire army with just that, and has units that can come back from reserve or from after being destroyed, which is a very cool old Tyranidy rule.
Right. Kind of the without number thing they used to have.
Yep. And lots of flying stuff.
Mine is going to be, because most of the armies I play are still restricted to this, mine is honestly the Combined Arms Detachment. Because, let's see, I play Sisters, I play Tau, I play Chaos Space Marines, I play Chaos Demons, and I play Black Templars, and Black Templars don't get any benefit from any of the stuff in the Gladius or the Battle Demi Company. So my armies all are, until they get updated, and good luck on Templars because they just got a codex update technically. Good luck on that, but otherwise, until they get updated, I'm stuck with the old school way of doing things, and I've got a couple of formation ideas that I can splash in, but I'm stuck with Combined Arms and then Allied for my like the demon stuff or vice versa. So if I had to actually pick something new, I would say I really like the Craft World Host. I think it's a tie between the Necron Decurion and the Eldar Craft World Host as far as the best constructed of those. Because I think the Khorne Demonkin one needs a couple more options to really work. I think we've talked about our issues with the Space Marine one, and those issues carry over to the Dark Angels one. But I think those two are the pinnacle of where they should be for both flexibility, fluff-wise, but still giving you an army that really works. So I really do like that one. But as far as what I actually use from day to day, from game to game, I'm Combined Arms Attachment all the way. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up our discussion of formations, attachments, et cetera, et cetera. Next week, we will probably have another non-Codex topic. This will be interesting. But we'll wrap up the show with hobby progress. I have had little to nothing. I've had a very busy couple of weeks. I did pick up the one thing I did is I did pick up a couple of after the tournament, I stopped by Gamers Guild there in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, and picked up some old metal sniper drones and spotters had used, like hanging on the wall. So I've got to strip those. The only downside is half of the drones have the antennas and half of them don't. And they don't use the standard drone style of antenna. So I haven't decided if I'm either going to mix and match, so like one drone per squad have antenna, or break off all the antenna and replace them with something else, or do one squad with one side. I haven't figured that out, but I've got to strip them, and I'm out of simple green, so I need power purple or what is it, whatever it is.
No, she's the
character from Mad Max.
Right, I think it's actually something like that. Like,
okay.
Yeah, anyway. But yeah, the purple stuff.
Yeah, so I need to strip those. And then right before we went to Bartlesville, the night before, I put together Longstrike just because I could, and he was sitting around. But I primed him late at night, and it was starting to cool down, and it was very humid. So the primer ended up turning – the black primer turned kind of a dusty – Well, not dusty, but it turned gray. It still did a good priming job, but it's not as dark as I wanted. So I'm going to have to repaint over the barrel and stuff like that. But so that's done. I've got to see if I'm going to buy anything new soon, because I'd want to get a couple of Storm Talons, but that may have to wait. Otherwise, I'm probably going to be trying to build the last few vehicles and stuff for my sister's army so I can get that primed and then move on to building Eldar. So that's me.
Gen Con. That was really what I've been doing.
You spent a Carl and a half from what I gather.
Yeah. So Carl's what, $500?
$500,
yes. Yeah, I spent a Carl and a half at Forge World. It's one of those things where you go to a convention, you usually have more money than impulse control. So I was able to get a lot of stuff. I got the newer of the two Forge World Riptides. I already had the other one, so now I've got both of them. I picked up the Dreadclaw drop pod. I picked up IA-13, the
Lost in the Damned.
Lost in the Damned. And then they had the Chitin Demon Engine and the Chaos Knight that I went ahead and picked up as well.
Couldn't help yourself.
I couldn't help it. I had the money, and I'm like, well, if I don't buy them here, I don't have shipping. So I bought those. I have not started working on any of it. I've been working on building stuff for my Demonkin list, trying to kind of get it up and running, get an 1850 list of it, which I'm going to test on Saturday at the tournament.
Right.
And if that works, then I'll start working on painting that for Renegade.
Cool.
Well, we've kind of mentioned some of it, but I've been putting together a bunch of Guardians because I'd never had Guardians together and wanted to finally try out the Footdar list. And I know, Rob, you talked about priming. I actually found some purple primer. So instead of
the Army Painter, right?
Yes, Army Painter Alien Purple Primer. And so now instead of priming my army white and painting it all purple, I'm just going to prime it purple and hopefully save a big step that took forever.
It will. Because that's what John did with the Space Wolves, and it worked really well for him.
Yes.
I also, from Gen Con, picked up... I only spent half a Carl.
So right. Together you spent two Carls.
Right. Yes.
Math.
Yes.
Math, yay.
But I picked up Mortarion. And I did manage to actually put him together last week. He looks really cool.
Yeah.
I'm trying to decide whether or not I do want to magnetize the display base that the 40 mil base slots into or out of before I prime it and paint it, which I probably am. And then I picked up Siege of Rax, which is pretty cool, like that, and a t-shirt.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I picked up a World Leaders t-shirt.
Nice.
I picked up a Death Company t-shirt.
Sweet.
I also picked up another Hive Tyrant kit to put together, because I only have two flying Hive Tyrants, and more flying Hive Tyrants is good.
Yes, yes. Not for us, but for you.
For me, is good. Yeah, having another option on...
Because what? Combined Arms Detachment plus Skyblight equals fun, fun, fun?
Yes.
Yeah.
actually, I'm running Hypertoxic Note, but... That's another Hive Tyrant. So, yeah. Anyway. And then also picked up a set of Stern Guard Veteran and a Librarian, one of the new plastic librarians, to start adding on to stuff to make Red Hunters.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
To go along with my Inquisition stuff. So, like, I just bought them. I haven't done anything with them yet so far, but...
Cool.
Well, that pretty much wraps us up for tonight. And if, as Kevin and Richard mentioned, they were at Gen Con, and part of that was recording with the Under Discussion crew. Mm-hmm. There's a whole week's worth of Gen Con coverage.
Yeah, we put out three episodes from the convention and then a wrap-up episode afterwards.
Right.
So. And the car cast going down.
Yeah, so there's a whole... So if you want to go to Gen Con without having gone to Gen Con, these guys did it for you, so you can go to undergopher.com and catch those episodes and support that podcast and listen to everything we all missed out on that for those of us who didn't make it. And again, I want to reiterate, we have announced the Midwest Conquest GT. You can find out more details about that on midwestconquest.com. And again, that is Memorial Day weekend 2016, Saturday and Sunday, May 28th and 29th at the Crown Center Sheraton Hotel as part of Conquest 47. So, we will be posting more information about that on our Facebook, on our Twitter, and the GT will have its own Twitter feeds, website, Facebook. So there'll be multiple avenues to catch up with what's going on. As soon as we know, we'll start announce, we'll announce army construction rules. Like, again, it's going to be an ITC event. So whatever ITC is doing, we're doing, but like prize support, sponsors, things like that, you'll be hearing it as it happens. So, and stay tuned to this podcast, because I'm sure as the months roll on and we get closer to the event, we'll have more and more details and things to tell you. So just stick with us there. So again, that wraps us up. So for all of us here at Preferred Enemies, I'm Rob.
Kevin.
Dennis.
And Richard.
Good night. Good gaming. And I got to get a new mic cord.
Preferred Enemies is an Under Gopher Radio production and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 Unported License. Our theme music is Metal Slug 2 Super Vehicle 001/2, No Need to Reload, originally by Takushi Hayamuda and remixed by Roataka, courtesy of OC Remix. It can be found at ocremix.com.